Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and of course for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Tom Horn of Raiders News Network. Now, those of you who have been on listening to us regularly know Tom Horn. He's an ordained minister who some years ago started writing about the occult, and now he has a news network. He has a website, wonderful website, lots of great information. He publishes books, and actually, of course, many of these are well-selling books. We interview many of the authors here. But, of course, tonight we're going to be talking about what is really happening in the world spiritually, because I don't think you can understand anything that's going on. You can't understand the financial collapse of the coming destruction of the American dollar, of the chaos that lies ahead for our country and really for the world, without an understanding of the spiritual forces at work. Tom Horn, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, Dr. Monteith, well, let me say what a privilege it is to be back on your show again. You know that I say this and I mean it. You're one of the most important voices on the airwaves, and I applaud and I admire your steadfast, tireless commitment to broadcasting the kind of liberating truth that America and the rest of the world need now more than they ever have before.
Well, thank you. I appreciate those kind words. Of course, you're on the front lines of this battle, and I think God's just called certain people to do certain things. I think I'm called to do what I'm doing. And, of course, you're publishing books that are getting into bookstores all across America and using that vehicle, of course, to get the information out. So I'm going to let you sort of pick up the story Tom has written books about, you know, this effort to clone human beings into animals or animals into human beings. And so many of the things we actually carry as book, I think it's the Ahriman story? What is it?
Well, that my novel was the Ahriman Gate. The one after that was Nephilim Stargates. Of course, we're talking about the Nephilim.
All right, well, I'm just going to let you go. We actually carry both of those books, Nephilim Stargate. It was a fascinating, fascinating insight into the spiritual forces, but you pick up the story.
Well, and by the way, I also want to say I look forward to being with you this October in California, and when the time is right, we'll start advertising that conference over there at Raiders News Network, and hopefully that'll contribute a lot to the success of that. I want to also tell you that I was warmly surprised during the research for my next book, which will also be about the Nephilim, but this is going to be something different than I've ever done before. I'll actually introduce a little bit of that information there in California in October. But I was surprised doing this research. I knew that you would turn up. But I was surprised how often you show up as the go-to authority in print and in film. I mean, I saw you there in the new Dolan film, Eye of the Phoenix, and some other stuff. Made me happy that we are also republishing your important book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and also your new chapter that you just submitted for our 20 author book. We'll be talking about that at some point in the future. But very excited to be able to also do some little things in whatever way we can, Dr. Monteith, to continue to put out the good word there about everything that you do through Radio Liberty. So just so you know, everybody here in our staff, we very much appreciate and love everything that you've been doing and you continue to do.
Well, I appreciate that so much. Incidentally, for our listeners out there, the conference is on Sunday, the 25th of October of this year. It's going to be held at the Haftar Seascape Golf Course, where we ordinarily are. And I would just put in a plug, I will be down in Southern California on April 1st and April 2nd, talking in Orange County and Tarzana. If anybody's interested, they can call our 800 number, 800-544-8927. Well, Tom, you go right ahead with this, and I'm just going to let you pick
all right.
the story and carry it from there. But I appreciate your kind words, and we're really looking forward to having you with us as a special guest for that October 25th conference.
Well, we're looking forward to it too, and we'll be as soon as we get the green light from you, and we can start talking about it publicly there at Raiders. We'll start doing that, and I know that some of the people that are very faithful supporters of Raiders News Network are also going to want to be a part of that. But let's talk about the Nephilim. You asked me to come on tonight to talk about the Nephilim, and not sure why, but just kind of out of the blue, you contacted me and asked me to come on and talk about this subject, and I think it might have had something to do with some shows I was doing with Steve Quayle or something, but here's the deal. You know, in Genesis chapter 6, there's this amazing story. It's actually told around the world in all of the cultures of the world. But, of course, as you know, my background and scholarship is in biblical theology. And in Genesis, you have this story, Genesis 6, when men began to increase on the earth and daughters were born to them, the sons of God, these angels, noted their beauty. And they took wives from among them. That's the story. And when you compare that scripture with all of with other things that it says, of course, in the Bible about the Nephilim or the Nephilim, I always say the Nephilim because I'm an Okie, but Nephilim, I guess, is appropriate. But all these ancient texts, the books of Enoch, Jubilees, Baruch, the Genesis Apocryphon from the Dead Sea Scrolls, Philo, the ancient Jewish historian Josephus, the books of Jasher, all these books around the world tell this incredible tale where we learn that the earth was visited by giants, by Nephilim, such as Goliath. And these were beings that were part human, part demon, part animal, at the offspring of an angelic interruption, if you will, and probably a scheme, into what God had made on earth, into humans. Now, the word here for giant in the Old Testament is the word Nephilim, as I mentioned, and as you probably know, Dr. Monteith, the root meaning there is the fallen ones, or those who from heaven to earth came. And there's significant language here because when the Septuagint Greek version of the Old Testament was made, Nephilim was translated as Geganus, and this word Geganus turns up like in the King James Bible as giants, which that is what it means, those of great height. But it also
hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Tom is just saying that in the Bible, but in many of the other ancient books that were written at that time, which are not included in the Holy Scriptures, but certainly give us an idea of the thought process, that there is this description of the Nephilim, which is a word that means giant. And, of course, it's interpreted as that these were certainly fallen angels or angelic beings who were really probably certainly out of fellowship with God. So pick the story up from there, Tom.
Well, and I was making the point, too, that the word Geganus, from which the word giant is made, also carries with it the meaning earth-born. And in theology and in ancient studies, this term was used, well, it was also used to describe the mythical titans. And the reason behind that is because this term, Geganus, or earth-born, these giants, the meaning there is that these were beings that were partly of celestial and partly of terrestrial origin. And so even the very meaning of the word behind these Nephilims contributes to the idea that this was something where angels were trying to invade themselves, if you will, into human union. Now, according to some of those apocryphal books that I mentioned a moment ago, these Nephilim filled the earth with violence and literally sought to corrupt and to destroy the Hebrew people. And some scholars believe, you know, that was ultimately an attempt by Satan to cut off the birth line of the Messiah. And I think there's something to that because Satan obviously would have known about what's called the Proto-Evangelium, the promise in Genesis 3:16 that a Savior would be born, the seed of the woman. and that he would destroy Satan's power. And so Satan's followers, those who were called the Anunnaki, the Cha-Cha, the Watchers in the first book of Enoch, second book of Enoch, they intermingled with the Antediluvian women, according to this theory, in a conspiracy to stop the birth of the Messiah. The idea being that if human DNA could somehow be universally corrupted, then there would be no way for a spotless Son of God to be born. And of course, that would have been true if the bloodline leading to the time of the Messiah would have included universally demonized DNA. Then, of course, no Savior could have been born and mankind would have been lost forever. And some theologians believe that that's why God commanded Israel not to be intermarrying with the heathen population, so that there could be a pure bloodline in Israel. And then secondly, later, of course, he commands Noah to build an ark and to prepare for a flood that's going to destroy every living thing. And the very fact that God had to send this kind of universal fiat of judgment like the flood illustrates, in my mind, Dr. Monteith, how widespread this altered DNA had eventually become. It was universal. In fact, you probably know this, what the Bible says, that only Noah by that time, and therefore by extension only his children, were found perfect in their generation. And the Hebrew word there for perfect is the same that's used in Leviticus to describe an unblemished sacrificial lamb, meaning probably not moral perfection, but that Noah had been physically untainted. His DNA had not been corrupted or altered by the Nephilim, as apparently the rest of the world had been at that time. Now, I know we want to try to cover a lot of ground today, so I'll skip forward real fast and say, imagine now the startling proposition of some of the stuff that I've written about in my books. And anybody that have read those books, and they can get those books directly from you, Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012, and the Return of the Watchers, also the Ahriman Gate, they can buy those directly from you, and we would encourage them to. Anybody that has read or does read those, gets those from you and reads them, will find that there's a solid preponderance of Scripture and ancient records to support the notion that what happened in Genesis 6 with the Watchers mingling the DNA of humans and animals in order to produce this suitable body into which they could extend themselves is the inference from the ancient text, from their plane of existence into ours, as is referred to in a couple of different places in the New Testament, Peter and Jude, talking about these angels which kept not their first estate but left their plane of existence, left their habitation. That is something, Dr. Monteith, that's most likely to happen again. And that is where sometimes I think I lose a lot of people. That this not only happened once, but prophetically, including from within Scripture, this is something foretold to happen again. These beings are coming back.
Well, because they were told of the Scriptures when Christ is asked, you know, how will we know about your coming? And he says, as it was in the days of Noah. And, of course, we have to assume that the Nephilim were on the earth at that time in the days of Noah. So, go right ahead.
Well, there are so many Scriptures. For instance, Daniel chapter 2, 43, and whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay, end quote. And the personal pronoun there, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, this is something that staggers the mind. And by the way, this came up when I was reading some of your material out of your book just recently. What this verse could portend, the significance potentially of Daniel's passage here and its implications for the future of global governance, which is all over the world right now. Internationally, everybody is talking about a new world order, a new financial system. China today talking about the need for a new global currency. Russia last week talking about the need for a new global currency. And if we keep pouring trillions of American tax dollars and devaluing the dollar in the way that we are doing, we're going to We're going to wake up tomorrow morning and literally have an ordo ad chao. We're going to have a situation in which a new world order is not just going to be something we talk about anymore. I mean, it's on the boilerplate right now. And what's amazing about what Daniel says when he's talking about this final earthly kingdom, this revived Roman world order, he talks about something that indicates that the same kind of phenomenon that had occurred in Genesis 6, where you had non-human species, non-seed, mingling with human seed and producing the giants. He directly ties this to the revived Roman Empire of the last days, the revived empire, the new world order, if you will. And another thing, so that the spirit of the Nephilim is operating in this new system. Another thing, when those non-seed who mingle themselves with the seed of men, when that verse is coupled with Genesis chapter 3, there is this incredible tenet that emerges, and that is that Satan has seed. Now, I mean, people need to let that sink in for a moment. Satan has seed, according to the scripture. He has offspring, and it's at enmity with Christ. Genesis 3 says, I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. And when scholars translate this word seed, this is a Hebrew word zera. It's not a complicated word. It has literally only one meaning, and that is offspring. Descendants, progeny, children. So, you know, what are we talking about here when the scripture is literally telling us that in this final world empire, this occult hierarchy, as you phrased it in your book, that within their system of governance, there is a non-seed that is mixed with human seed. There is this satanic posterity that's there now. It's waiting for its final opportunity to mingle itself with human DNA as in the days of old. You just said a moment ago, the scripture Jesus says, as it was in the days of Noah. The very thing that marked the days of Noah more than anything else was the occupation on earth of the Nephilim. And what brought about, according to both the scripture and the books of Enoch, what brought about the flood, the extinction of that former antediluvian race as a result of what was going on the earth with the intermarriage that led to the corruption of human DNA through intermarriage with those who had this tainted genetic order. Are we talking about a method which the Nephilim are going to return? Are we talking about something now that's happening, both the call for a new world order, a new world system, what we're doing in tinkering with genetic sciences? Do these ancient records tell us something about how the giants are going to return? Is this how the Antichrist himself is going to be incarnated? Because if Genesis 6, I think I jumped ahead of myself there a little bit, and I hope I didn't confuse people, but Dr. Monteith, if Genesis 6 is truly an account of rebel angels leaving their assigned habitation and cohabiting with human females, out of which union mutant life forms were born on Earth, then is it reasonable to assume that Satan, as a fallen angel, either already has or is going to be allowed the ability to mingle his material, as these prophecies seem to indicate, with the DNA of Homo sapiens, produce a child? The Apostle Paul literally called the coming of the Antichrist the son of perdition, the offspring, the seed, once again, of Apollyon, the demon destroyer incarnate. And now, of course, understanding the science behind how those beings left their estate and came to the earth in the first place, I think, is probably also helpful in understanding how they could come the second time.
Well, I think that there are many things we won't understand, but certainly I think there's no question at all that these demonic forces are alive and well here on the earth in many forms, and of course sometimes inhabiting men. Who knows? But I believe we are moving rapidly towards the end of times. Well, Tom, pick the story right up there.
Well, I'm an old preacher, and every once in a while I start talking.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
coupling together with the seed of women are to create a different type of being. And of course, one so interesting thing today, and perhaps somebody just called in and asked the question, we hear a great deal about, of course, UFO abductions. When I first heard about them, I thought they were the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard of, but after having studied them and realizing there are literally thousands of UFO abductions, they all tell essentially the same story. And one of the things that's so common here in these stories you get from people who claim they've been abducted is a collection of DNA, of ovum from women, of semen from men, as if these demonic beings, which I believe that the UFOs are demonic manifestations, are intent upon collecting human DNA. Does that fit at all into the story you're telling?
Well, it does fit into what I'm telling, and of course, you know, I've written about that in both of the books, the last two books that I've written, what Jacques Vallée called vital energy, the need to collect human DNA. And the interesting thing is, you know, even Dr. I.D.E. Thomas, whose book we republished, The Omega Conspiracy, you know, his whole book is about the return of the Nephilim, and yet half of that book he's talking about UFOs and alien abduction. And it's because in the history of the world, you have a phenomenon that occurs, and that people having experiences in which, as you said a moment ago, there are these, what are they? These super intelligent unknowns that seem to be able to break all of the laws of physics as we understand them. They come in and out of our reality, but they have an interest in blood, in tissue, matter. It isn't just humans. They, you know, Skippy the horse goes out in the field one night and doesn't come back. You go out the next day and find him, and parts of his anatomy have been removed with laser-like surgery. And so there seems to be this harvesting of matter related to three-dimensional life forms, intelligent life forms. And this goes back to what I was talking about before we went to the commercial break, Dr. Monteith, that these watchers, this is what they wanted to do. They wanted to leave the restraint of the supernatural realm, or their dimension, their other dimension, whatever dimension that is. And they wanted to enter into this three-dimensional reality. They wanted to be in bodies of flesh, if you will. And it was problematic because everything that God had created and everything that God had put into motion, the spirit that would enter into that at the moment of creation or at the moment of conception, dated back to the creation of God. And so everything had been set in motion, dating back to God. And here was the problem for them, is that we learn from Leviticus in the Old Testament that God also set barriers between the species. And he commanded, he ordered, in other words, divine order, he ordered that every kind, every type, would reproduce after its own kind. Now, Dr. Monteith, if we were talking to an exorcist tonight, an exorcist would tell us that we might be able to cast an alien spirit, if you will, out of somebody. But the one thing that we could never do would be to cast that person's innate spirit out of them. In other words, you are you until the day that you die. Well, neither could the watchers replace the spirit of a man or a beast in that way. But here's the point. These watchers, according to the ancient texts, had participated with God in creation, and therefore they knew something about science. They knew about biotechnology. They knew about transgenics, the blending of DNA of one species with another. And I think that this is why the ancient records, if you look at all of these, even the images, the statues of half humans, half horse, half man, and half goat, that these are a crude record of something that had occurred. And it began with these watchers who knew that the key, I think, to solving their problem, to leaving their estate and coming into this reality, and to incarnating themselves, leaving their plane of existence, that they had to become Luciferian enough to, first of all, break the law of God by breaching the species barrier. Secondly, create a blended being, which would not allow the spirit of a man or a beast to enter into it, because it would be neither a man nor a beast. and then leave their estate in a mockery of what God had done, breathe themselves into their own mutation, this Nephilim, and accept the judgment of God. And that is what they did. And I think that's what the ancient records tell us. And this led to this unique being, part human, part animal, part angel, maybe even part plant, according to the Book of Enoch. And this was the being, then, who had levels of perception into the human three-dimensional reality.
Hold that thought right there, Tom. I'll be back in just a moment. Why do you go right ahead, Tom?
Well, we, you know, talking about how these beings, blended animals, these watchers who wanted to leave their estate, and blended animals and humans, according to the ancient records, and created a unique body, something that God had not made. And isn't it interesting, Dr. Monteith, you're a medical doctor. You may still go to these different conventions and whatever they're held now that are talking about the latest technological advances. And the ethics now that are being raised, especially being driven, I think, by people who have an interest in the transhumanist movement, but that are being raised both in our law schools, like Harvard and Oxford and like that, and also in our medical institutions about the ethics involved around the blending of humans and animals. Now, right now, we're only doing that at the embryonic level, but everybody's talking about this, theoretically at least, in the open forum, about what it might mean in the future when you're talking about something that's only part human and part animal. And I believe that what we're doing right now is a repeat of an ancient technology that existed once before that led to beings that had perception outside of what you and I understand to be human perception. Because if you're part animal, you're part angel, you have modes of perception outside of our normal ability to comprehend the world around us. You might be able to see into the angelic realm, into the demonic realm, into the animal realm. Then we know that animals, of course, can see into different light spectrums, and some people believe that they can even see into the spiritual realm. And this is where some of this science might be taking us. By the way, Dr. Monteith, I believe that there is even an example of this happening in the Old Testament. There's something unusual in the Old Testament. And you can imagine with my background in biblical theology that I found it extraordinary that the Hebrew prophet Isaiah actually supports what I believe to be Amorite theology. Now, of course, this could have been Hebrew or biblical theology that was stolen by the Amorites, but it's recorded in Amorite records. But Isaiah in Isaiah 14 describes how the Rapha, or the...
Hold that thought for just a moment. We can bring our stations back on board, and I'd want them to understand what you're saying. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Tom is talking about the ancient records that suggest some very, very strange things. You picked the story right up there, Tom.
Well, we were talking about the creation of the Nephilim, how the Watchers did this through the blending of animals and humans, and how this led to the incarnation, the whatever the word might be, the creation of a physical body into which these angels were able to extend themselves, and of course they came under great judgment from God. But there's something very interesting in Isaiah, the 14th chapter, where he is describing how the Rapha, or the Rephaim, which are known to be in the lineage of the Nephilim, how that here they are in the underworld, and in the underworld, these Rephaim, which are dead Nephilim, the spirits of the dead Nephilim, how that in the inner earth, they form this acolyte assembly of kings and rulers who serve fervent devotion to the god Baal. Isaiah 14:9-10, he says, Hail, that is Sheol Hades from beneath, is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead, this is the Hebrew word Rapha, for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It hath raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. And they shall speak and say unto thee, Art thou become weak as we art thou become like unto us? End quote. So here's this picture that Isaiah is giving us of these kings that will rise up from their thrones from within the underworld. This is Amorite theology. Now, it's incredible because these passages tell us something about what was believed in ancient times with regard to what the offspring of the watchers could do. The word Rephaim, this Amorite term, the meaning behind it is to be healed from death or to be resurrected, to be reincarnated, to be reanimated, to be brought back. And in the ancient Amorite Rashamra text, these Rephaim are described as having been before death both human and divine beings. They were Nephilim. In fact, the Amorites actually even refer to them in this state as Nephilim. They use the same terms. And before death, they worship the Amorite god Baal, the ruler of the underworld. But at death, they go down into the underworld, where they become this acolyte assembly of kings and gods and heroes and rulers, just as is described by Isaiah. Now, here's the kicker, Dr. Monteith. These were beings that had the ability, given what we don't know, given the right body, given the right technology, given the right circumstances, that's the question we don't really know. But they had the ability, given the right something, to return from the dead. Through reincarnation, according to Amorite theology, in bodily form and then known again as Nephilim. And some people believe that this might explain how the Nephilim and the Nephilim existed both before and after the Great Flood, because they have some technology, some ability to come back. Now, this is where this becomes important in terms of what we're doing in science today. Imagine the startling proposition of such texts as in Isaiah 14, where it talks about these things being able to come back. Also Isaiah 13, where it actually openly talks about the return of the giants when Babylon and Iraq are invaded and destroyed. So this is significant that the Nephilim, the giants, the mighty men of old, the gods and children of the watchers, if you will, that they could return, that they can rise again, that they can be reanimated. Well, what I was going to say before the break is that some people might be surprised to know that I believe that one of the greatest legends in history could actually be a record of this having happened. And I'm referring, of course, to Nimrod, who some scholars also identify as Gilgamesh of Sumerian fame. And this Gilgamesh was a giant who many people didn't even believe was anything more than myth until his grave marker was found a few years back. And I don't know if you remember that, but the military swooped in. The Iranian archaeologists were there, and they found the grave marker of Gilgamesh. And literally within, because I do Raiders News Network, and I update the news sometimes on an hourly basis, it was literally within hours that the military was there, and they set up a perimeter around this. So who knows what they were interested in. We don't know if they recovered something, they took possession of something, we don't know. But the tomb of Gilgamesh was actually discovered, illustrating that he probably wasn't just a myth. In any case, this Gilgamesh, or Nimrod as he's called in the Bible, very likely an example of a person being one thing, then changing into something else, that allowed for something extraordinary to rise up into or to reanimate within him. Now I say this because of this extraordinary record in Genesis, the 10th chapter, Genesis 10:8, where it says that Nimrod began to be a mighty, and the Hebrew word there, mighty, is Geborim, which many scholars place in the lineage of the Nephilim. And so think about that statement. Here's Nimrod, and suddenly the 10th chapter of Genesis says about Nimrod, this mighty hunter before the Lord. It says he began to become a mighty. He began to become a Geboran. Now, Dr. Monteith, I can tell you that not long ago, I began to become a diabetic because of my poor choices in food, diet, exercise, you know, too busy to eat right, get up in the morning, go until 8 o'clock, until 8 p.m., actually, never eating. Well, I threw my whole metabolism off, and my doctor believed at that time that I had probably triggered this genetic inherent, and that it had begun changing me in genetic ways, in metabolic ways. And now I have to take medicine to keep diabetes from killing me. It's that powerful. It literally has the ability to do that to me. Now, and this is important, just because I had the gene trait that could lead to diabetes didn't mean that it would develop. It was a part of my genetics, my DNA, my bloodline, but it didn't necessarily mean that it would ever be activated. But due to my decisions, maybe even certain environmental conditions, this gene turned on, for want of a better term, and I begin changing into a different person. Now, I've often wondered if this record of Nimrod, where it says he began to be a Geboran, wasn't indicative of something about him genetically, something inherent in his bloodline or his genes, and that because of his actions, something triggered the beginning of him changing into something that he wasn't before, or maybe even something like a retrovirus, you know, that started rewriting his DNA, and through doing so, he started becoming a transhuman, a fit extension for one of the gods, for the offspring of the Watchers. I also say this, Dr. Stan, because another piece of really important information occurs in the next chapter of the book of Genesis. Whereas in chapter 10 of Genesis, Nimrod begins to be a Geboran. One chapter later, immediately, he goes, as soon as he starts becoming a Geboran, he goes and he sets out to build a tower whose top, what does the Bible say, will reach into heaven, into Shemayim, into the dwelling place of God. And the let us go down and see what man is doing group descended and said nothing. They came down, saw what was happening, and said nothing shall be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. And what was it that they imagined to do? They imagined to build a tower, a gateway to God, a tower whose top would reach literally into Shemayim. Now, the how this leaps forward into the present day for me is that the connection between transhumanism and its goal for entirely new levels of human perception and sensory modalities, that coupled with return of the Nephilim in terms of Scripture, I think is phenomenal. Examples, first of all, think of, here's Nimrod. He starts becoming transhuman, and suddenly it's as if he can see in the new modes of perception. He goes to a specific place where he builds a tower, which he believes will reach into Shemayim, and God says what they've imagined to do they're going to accomplish. And that would make sense, actually, if in fact he had been changed into the offspring of the Watchers, because the Watchers could certainly see into what we think of as the spirit world. Another thing that this activity by Nimrod does is that it, and this is kind of a revolutionary thought, but what he does actually potentially points to, certain earth locations as openings or portals, pathways, stargates, locations that are hidden to us in our current state and should be hidden to us.
Now, are these something like ley lines you're speaking of?
Well, sacred geometry, yeah, you know, ley lines could be part of what I'm talking about. Sacred geometry, sacred locations. Where if our eyes were opened and we could see what this might mean to us in the spiritual realm. In other words, that mystical heaven is not way out there in the stratosphere somewhere, but maybe it's just right above our heads. And possibly attainable. This is what Nimrod was intending to do, and what God said they will do if we don't confuse their languages and scatter the nations. That heaven would actually be attainable on the top of a high tower. Imagine that. Does that also mean that then there are locations on the earth where if we could see specifically those openings, we would be able to attain into heaven on the tops of high towers, mountains, very specific locations? You wonder, actually, if that's not why buried deep in our human psyche, and in ancient records, by the way, is this belief that man can meet with God, or if you want to go outside of the Hebrew Bible, the gods, upon high locations, the mountain of Olympus, Moses meeting with God on Sinai, the watchers touching down on Mount Horeb in the days of Jared, literally walking out of heaven onto the top of the mountain, Jesus returning upon the Mountain of Olives, in the future. In Mayan culture, Quetzalcoatl coming down off the top of the mountain. This might be very important in determining why Nimrod built his tower exactly where he did. And by the way, if this whole theory is true, it might also have something to do, Dr. Monteith, with why the U.S. military has a presence in Iraq today. But in any case, Nimrod's transhumanism could have done several things. One, made him an appropriate receptacle, a portal for the gods. Two, opened his mind and eyes afterward to godlike perception. And three, caused him to immediately go and build a tower of Babel, this ancient home of the Babili, the gate of the Eli, the illumined ones, the gate to God. In the Bible, this huge tower, called in the Sumerian Etamenanki, which means the house of the foundation of heaven on earth. So Nimrod, I think, could be an actual example. And by the way, I'm going to go into great lengths about this theory in my new book, but I think he could be an actual example of my thesis, and also the builder of what Isaiah the prophet referred to when he says that a gateway is going to open in the end of time through which the Geborim are going to return, and he marks this as happening when Babylon is invaded, rebuilt, and then destroyed. By the way, for people that are listening to this radio show and wondering what portion of scripture I'm talking about, that's from Isaiah 13, 1 through 3. And you can read the Septuagint version of this online. Just go to Google or whatever and type in Septuagint Isaiah 13, 1 through 3. And you can.
I was just going to say, but would you? Well, we're getting close to the end of this hour, and we're going to lose some of our listeners. Would you like to get your website out where people could know how to get to your website and the information you offer, and then we'll go ahead.
Well, sure. You know, my website is Raiders, just like the football team. R-A-I-D-E-R-S, but the full name of the website is RaidersNewsNetwork.com, and the news is typically updated there every day, and we talk about this kind of material. We talk about mainstream news. We talk about esoteric news. We talk about the kind of things people ought to be interested in, and right now, of course, we're spending a lot of time talking about what's happening in terms of the development of Ordo Apkeo, New World Order.
All right, fine. So I just I would recommend there's a lot of fascinating material there at Raiders News Network. So I just wanted to have that out. You go right ahead with your story about the Nephilim and of course how you feel that certainly Nimrod was trying to build this tower to be able to contact the supernatural world where God lives. So pick up the story.
Well, or even as an act of defiance, that he, you know, this Luciferian spirit that says, I will exalt my throne above the throne of God. Nimrod literally determined that he was going to build a tower whose top would reach literally into the throne room of God himself. And when God came down, he said, what they've imagined to do, they will accomplish. And so he stammered their lips, he confused their languages, and from that point forward, mankind was scattered upon the earth. Now, of course, we don't have time to talk about this tonight, but if people do research, a good friend of mine, by the way, is Michael Heiser. I don't know if you've ever interviewed Michael, but you know, he's got his PhD in ancient Semitic languages. Michael can interpret, I think, 7 extinct languages. he is one of the true PhDs in Christianity today, and Michael believes that there is something to UFOs. He believes that there is something to the alien abduction phenomenon. Of course, he believes it is demonic, but he also talks about the Nephilim and so on. He earned his thesis, however, in writing about the Divine Council, and in the Divine Council, he is talking about those angels which, from the time of the Tower of Babel and forward, have been placed into a position of rulership over this earthly falling system.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, we have 3 minutes for you to wrap up this segment of the program. Then we'll be back after the break when we give our, we'll have to give a little talk, and then we'll be back right after that. But you got
heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh. Healthy. Easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. 630-9796, or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-
And we will be doing a program this next hour, and hopefully we'll have Tom back again. But if you'd like to get a copy of this program or this program and the next one, remember our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And there really is a spiritual battle going on today. People really don't understand that there is a supernatural realm. There really are amazing things that happen. Of course, many people don't like to believe in the supernatural. But if you believe in the validity of the scriptures, of Jesus being able to walk on water, to be able to raise the dead, to be able to cure the leper, to be able to actually enter into a room that was locked after the resurrection, that Jesus could actually come back from the dead, you have to believe in the supernatural. And if you believe in the supernatural, as do I, of course, you realize that we are involved in a supernatural battle, and a battle for the souls of men. And whether Western civilization as we know it will survive is very, very probable at this time, because people of this country have turned against God. And, of course, the wicked people have taken God and prayer out of our schools, but the good people have allowed it. And nobody will ever tell the public the reason that they took God and prayer out of a school is because Masons, members of a secret Luciferian society, control the Supreme Court. The majorities of 5-4 to 8-1 from 1941 to 1971. So why aren't we being told this? Why, very simply, because the dark side controls the media. Well, anyway, of course, we do hope many of you will want to get some of our writings on this. Certainly our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, the three pamphlets, a compilation of our newsletters on this subject. We carry, of course, Tom Horn's novel, The Ahriman Gate, and his book on the Nephilim Stargate. Fascinating insight into the supernatural element we face. We have a book on the alien intervention going into UFOs. We believe that they are demonic manifestations. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or heard my talk on the Forbidden Secret, you need to get it. There's a syllabus that comes with that. And you must understand that about 500 years ago in Europe, somebody, a very famous painter, painted a picture of the unfinished Tower of Babel, this tower that Nimrod was going to build, which would reach into the heavens. And, of course, that then you will find reduplicated today all throughout Europe. It is a symbol of the rebirth of the effort to unite the world. The European Union being the prototype of that, but of course we're going to see increasingly in the weeks and months that lie ahead a call for a new international order, a new economic order, a new world order. And if you doubt that, of course, the article written by Henry Kissinger, International Herald Tribune, January 12, 2009, if you can't get the article on the Internet, we'll be glad to send you one if you get anything else we have. If you don't believe that there are the supernatural forces and beings here, why, of course, if you get anything else from us, why, ask for the work of the spiritual hierarchy. It's distributed by the Lucis Trust. The Lucis Trust is, well, it is a descendant of the Lucifer Publishing House. If you doubt that, you go up on the Internet and just go to your search engine and type in Lucis Trust, Lucifer, and there is a treatise there put out by the Lucis Trust, and they can link to another website where they tell you that Lucifer was really a pretty good guy. He just got a bad rap from the average individual. Lucifer really came to Earth to help us common people. Understand, there are really people, millions of people who believe this. You, of course, need to get some of our things like They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, 4-hour, 10-hour version of an amazing DVD. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll by our friend Joe Schimmel. And, of course, the DVDs that Tom referred to earlier, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone, and The Eye of the Phoenix. They're all available at number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for revival today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And our guest is, of course, Tom Horn of Raiders News Network. And if you don't go to his website, why, you're missing a lot. There's a tremendous amount of information there. And you really can't understand what's going on. You can listen to the news, and you can listen to so many of our commentators. And Glenn Beck is very good, and many of the other people are very good out there, Lou Dobbs. But you're not going to be able to put everything into perspective unless you understand the spiritual component of what's going on today and the prophecies that were given thousands of years ago. But with that as the background, Tom, please go ahead, pick up the story.
Well, in that first hour, you know, we were talking about the science of watchers that gave birth to the Nephilim or the Nephilim, the old giants of ancient texts, and how that, in particular, Isaiah the prophet had described in Isaiah 13, 1 through 3, how these giants will return at the end of time. And what was interesting was that he specifically said they would return when Babylon, that is Iraq and Iran, are invaded and destroyed. In the Greek Septuagint, Isaiah 13, 1 through 3, he says, "The vision which Isaiah, son of Amos, saw against Babylon, lift up a standard on the mountains of the plain, exalt the voice to them, beckon with the hand, open the gates, ye ruler, I give command and I bring them, giants are coming to fulfill my wrath," end quote. The interesting thing here, Dr. Monteith, is that we have a time frame to deal with, in that Isaiah is not just making a cursory response here. He's actually talking about Babylon, and he's talking about Babylon, that is Iraq, at the end of time. And his interest in all of this is that at a time when Iraq is invaded, and then afterward utterly destroyed in such a way that you might have to imagine it being biological or nuclear annihilation. Nothing can exist there for decades. That just before that kind of destruction occurs, it's going to be invaded, and that God is going to order a ruler. And we don't know who this ruler is, but it sounds very much like the book of Revelation, where angels, powerful agents, are ordered to open and close different seals, the bottomless pit, that sort of thing. This ruler is commanded. It says, "I give command." He is commanded to open these gates. And when the gates are open, Isaiah says, the giants, the Geborim, are going to come through them, fulfilling the wrath of God at the end of time. So, in our discussion about the Nephilim, who they were, how they got here, which we discussed in the first chapter, we also talked about even Nimrod being an example of how they could return even from the dead, according to that theory, that these things are going to come back. Now, imagine, Dr. Monteith, imagine what that means. Imagine what this Isaiah 13 means. A full-on, open the gateways, flood of giants crawling over the earth. This sounds like something from a movie script, doesn't it? But think about this. This is not the only place in Scripture and in ancient prophetic texts where this prophecy is echoed, and we can talk about that later in this hour if you want to. But imagine what this means. How gigantic were the giants? I mean, as incredible as it sounds, there's archaeological evidence, records that humanoid skeletons that soared as high as 36 feet have actually been unearthed. In 1577 A.D., there was an almost 20-foot tall human skeleton that was found under an oak tree in the Canton of Lucerne.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with our friend Tom Horn. Well, you know, Tom, I did a series of interviews with a writer, a Jewish a scholar named Barry Shamish. He writes about politics, but I did do a series of programs with him about some research he'd done about a series of UFO sightings in Israel, and I think they stopped about 1995, as I remember, but they kept up for, 4 or 5, maybe 6 years or so. And, of course, one of the amazing things about this was it was actually dealt with giants. In fact, he even wrote a book about it called The Return of the Giants. He doesn't like to talk about it very much because it sounds so absurd. And yet, of course, these were all Jewish people he talked to who had seen and witnessed the UFOs. But some of them had actually seen the giants. And I'll tell you, as we did the stories, and as we actually did 4 stories, and as he talked about these people, this one fellow, poor fellow, opens his door, hears something outside, and he sees this 20-foot giant standing there in the doorway, and of course, he's frightened to death. But they actually, the Israeli military police actually tracked it and found these gigantic footsteps. There was something there. It wasn't just one story. It was a series of stories associated with these UFO sightings, and then they all disappeared, never to recur again. So, I mean, this is not as incredible as it may seem, at least not to me. Having had talked to Barry, and I think he had actually interviewed these Israeli citizens. Now, Barry's over here now because, of course, his life had been threatened living over in Israel. But I think he's a reliable reporter, and these stories were just too bizarre to have been made up. Go ahead.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, Barry, he sends me his stories. We report those sometimes at Raiders News Network, and he took a lot of heat when he did that investigative journalism and wrote his book, The Return of the Giants, but I applauded his bravery then, and I applaud his bravery now, because history verifies that these beings existed. They do exist, and there is prophecy that they are going to return. Now, the UFO connection, I think, is part and parcel to this phenomenology, that whatever is going on with these beings, people tend to sometimes separate the ancient stories of the Watchers and the Giants and the contemporary stories of UFO phenomenon, but I think we're actually talking about the same experience here, except that in ancient days these things were in bodies. They were giants. The Bible talked about them. Og, the king of Bashan, in the book of Deuteronomy, his bed was 9 cubits.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris Tom was just talking about this one ruler. He had, his bed was how long now?
In the Bible, Deuteronomy chapter 3, I believe, he talks about the bed of Og, the king of Bashan, whose bed was 9 cubits by 4 cubits. And by the way, in our understanding, that's 14 feet long by 6 feet wide, so this is a pretty big guy. 14 feet, I mean, can you imagine? But he's not the biggest. Humanoid skeletons as much as 36 feet tall have been unearthed. In 1577 A.D., there was a 19.6 foot, actually, human skeleton that was found under an oak tree in the Canton of Lucerne. There was a 23-foot tall skeleton that was discovered in the 1400s beside a river in Valence, France. And anybody that wants to verify what I'm talking about can Google this information. They'll find out it's true. So, but keeping within the scheme of what you and I have been talking about, that these things once came and that they're prophesied to come back again, imagine if the earth was suddenly overrun by millions of these things. Just imagine what that would mean. If Isaiah's prophecy, Isaiah 13, 1 through 3, is fulfilled in our lifetime, and it could be because he dates this to when Babylon, Iraq, is invaded in the end of times, and God orders some ruler to open a gateway through which the giants, Isaiah 13, 1 through 3, read that in the Greek Septuagint. If you're listening to this program, go to Google or whatever and find the Greek Septuagint. Read that. It'll absolutely startle you. And then, of course, if you go over to Joel, here's an interesting thing, Dr. Montes. My formal training told me that the book of Joel, chapter 2, referred to a locust plague. And for years, you know, I was a pastor, over 25 years I was a pastor. And then I was, after that, an executive director in the largest evangelical institution in the world for more than a decade. And my formal training told me that Joel 2 was talking about a grasshopper plague. But it wasn't until later, when doing all of this research into the Nephilim and the giants, I went back and I read Joel again. And I'm opening it right here, right now. Listen to this. Listen to these comments by Joel about this end times invading army that's going to invade the earth. He says, quote, "They are a great people and a strong. There hath not been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it. And nothing shall escape them. The appearance of them is as the appearance of horses, and as horsemen, so shall they run. Like the noise of chariots on the tops of mountains shall they leap. As a strong people set in battle array, before their face the people shall be much pained. All faces shall gather blackness. They shall run like mighty men." Now let me hesitate there for a moment, because as you know, mighty men, that's a term for Nephilim in the scriptures, for giants, the mighty men, the Giborim. "They shall run like the mighty men, men of war. They shall run to and fro in the city. They shall run upon the wall. They shall climb up on the houses. They shall enter in at the windows like a thief." Now, that's interesting compared to what you said a moment ago, Dr. Monteith, when you think about alien abduction phenomena. He talks about these spirits come into the windows like a thief. And then I'll just finish with reading this last part of it. "The earth shall quake before them. The heavens shall tremble. The sun and the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. And the earth shall utter his voice before his army, before his camp is very great, for he is strong that executeth his word. For the Lord, the day of the Lord is great and very terrible, and who can abide it?" This is Revelation 9:2 comparative. So you have these amazing prophecies that compare perfectly to Isaiah, stating how the Lord is going to open this gateway and allow this Giborim giant to come forth as the day of battle, fulfilling his wrath. And one last interesting point before I leave this, because I realize we still have a lot of territory we want to try to cover tonight. But Isaiah goes on to describe Babylon's utter destruction by what really, if you read the text, I think it can only be nuclear radiation or biological contamination. But it says that Babylon will only thereafter be inhabited for generations by satyrs and monsters. And he literally describes these beings that are part human and part animal, which makes you wonder if what we're doing now in science today by blending species is not going to open some kind of a Pandora's gate Pandora's box for the return of these beings. I honestly think that this is what's being indicated here. This is what's being talked about here. I believe, Dr. Monteith, that today, if you look at modern science, we are creating what the Watchers did in ancient times, the merging of animals and humans, that we are doing, in so doing, we are opening a gateway towards destruction. You look at all of these old records of the mixing of humans and animals in the Amorite texts, in the Egyptian texts, in the Greek texts. There is this record, this repetitive record. And what's interesting is even the meaning of the names of these deities, like Apollo, his ancient name, Apollo, Apollyon, the destroyer. When you look at this old record that was left behind for us, and then all of a sudden, mankind is wiped out. Even the Bible talks, you know, about this. The creation and then the recreation. The earth was created, everything was great, and then all of a sudden darkness is upon the face of the deep. And something has to be remade. You look at all of the artifices around the world, the great pyramids, these testaments that at one time there was knowledge, fantastic, advanced knowledge around the world, and then suddenly all of it was lost. And in all of those records, there is a repeat iconography, a repeat imagery that turns up over and over again that shows animals and humans, half horse, half man, half goat, half man, half some other kind of animal, half man. And it looks to me as if there was a warning, a testament that was left behind in these crude renderings about the kind of technology and science that former people reached that ultimately led to destruction, great flood, the judgment of God, and then all of a sudden mankind is on the earth and being recreated again. But now, today, we have President Obama lifting the ban on human embryo research, which, as you know, is going to open the doors to much more than what we've done so far. Because now it's going to provide federal funding for the creation of human-animal chimeras. And, of course, as I believe, and I think you and I have discussed this on your show before, the private research centers, funded with private money, they've already been doing this and more in the United States and around the world, anyway, for the last several years. And the frightening thing about these privately funded laboratories is that they have either little or no government insight at all, and so they could be doing almost any kind of Dr. Moreau Frankensteinian experiments, and the public wouldn't even know about it. In the openly funded laboratories, right now, the last information that I read, they seem to be having a problem, you know, with figuring out how they're going to get past issues with assembly line human-animal hybrid creation using these hollowed-out animal eggs and human genetic material. You might have read last month where Robert Lanza of the Advanced Cell Technology, there's this California right there where you are, stem cell company, Advanced Cell Technology, and he published a paper in the journal Cloning and Stem Cells, which showed that human cow, human mouse, human rabbit, and so forth, hybrid embryos, were in their laboratory, were often failing to grow beyond 16 cells. And so he saw this as being problematic in terms of being able to harvest stem cells for scientific research using part human, part animal products. Almost immediately, there were scientists out of the UK which rejected his paper, saying that those issues are going to quickly be solved. And once they are, then, Dr. Monteith, I mean, we're off and running with the restraints, with the shackles having now been removed by Obama, the human animal cloning farms, the chimera cloning farms, are literally going to just take off like a house of fire. Well, they already are, but it's going to be even more so in the very near future.
Well, you know, of course, as it says, it will be as it was in the days of Noah, and God intervened at that point and destroyed the world other than Noah, you know, the great flood. And there seems to be so much verification for the flood occurred. Well, we're told that he's not going to use a flood again to destroy the world, but I do not believe that God is going to allow this sort of thing to continue. I mean, he's just, and I think that this is certainly a sign. They're rapidly approaching those times that were described as it was in the days of Noah. We'll be right back here with Tom Horn. Tom, you go ahead and pick the story up.
Well, Dr. Monteith, you were making the point that God is not going to allow.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, Call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
A creation model, the biblically based creation model. And if you go there and you click on it, you'll go literally to their website. It's a secular website. And these transhumanists are discussing how that they will now use science, biotechnology, nanotechnology, and so on, and how they envision making themselves better than what God made, psychically enhanced, faster, stronger, resilient to disease. But they literally say in that article, Dr. Monteith, that they are going to correct the failed molecular wear and tear model of the human species that God made, which they say is fraught with deterioration and death, that they are going to improve it by obtaining entirely new capacities, such as infrared vision, bat-like navigation, other wonderful animal characteristics as they merge themselves with other species. What's astonishing about this is that we're talking about the return of the Nephilim. And one of the things that I found when I was doing research into the Nephilim was how that in addition to gigantism, and that's the thing we tend to usually focus on, but that in addition to their great stature, the descriptions of the ancient Nephilim include psychic abilities, mind control, superhuman strength, lifespans like those that are only envisioned by transhumanists today. In fact, Nick Bostrom, who is a leading transhumanist advocate, he's a professor of philosophy at Oxford University, he wrote in his thesis, he earned his position at Oxford University by writing his thesis on transhumanist values. And he wrote in that thesis, which I've read, people can go to his website and read it for themselves, that the current human modalities, sensory modalities that we have, are not the only ones. Well, obviously that's true. The animal kingdom has modalities beyond ours. But he disparages the fact that our sensories of sight, smell, and so on, that these are not as highly developed as they could be. And he goes into great length talking about how animals have sonar, magnetic orientation, sensors for electricity and vibration, how they have a keener sense of smell than we do, sharper eyesight. And he talks about how the range of possible sensory modalities for humans are not limited to those that we have now, but he goes past that in saying that they're not even limited to those that are in the animal kingdom. That through synthetic biology and so on, that there's no fundamental block to adding all kinds of capacities to us as humans. Infrared radiation, an ability to perceive radio signals, telepathic. He goes into this whole thing about how we can develop telepathic senses by augmenting ourselves. Well, when you, and by the way, he's only one. I've also been on Dr. James Hughes' Chain Surfer Radio. Dr. James Hughes is also a professor and teaches, I'm trying to think of the name of the school. Anyway, he's a professor that has his own syndicated radio show called Chain Surfer Radio, teaches at Trinity College. I knew it would come to me. In Hartford. He sits on the board at Yale University. We couldn't possibly be from different worldviews. But he invited me on his show to debate him. And by the way, I got to tell you that off the air when the show was over, he told me that I did a better job presenting my view than he did. but the point is, these people are very serious and they occupy very important positions in our leading schools today, in law and academia. And these people believe that we are going to use technology which we have in our hands now, the ability to merge ourselves with animals, synthetic biology, nanotechnology, and other things, and that we are going to move from a transhuman, which is what they are, transhuman philosophy, within the next decade, within the next 10 years, we will move into a post-human period of time in which there will be humans which will have to be patented. They are so unlike you and I. This is what they believe.
Well, that thought, we'll be back in just a moment here with Tom Horn. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and go right ahead, Tom. You were just talking about the transhumanist views, and of course they think that we are going to be engineered into a higher state of a physical being, that they will actually be able to patent these new biological products, human clones, or call them what you will. Go right ahead with the story.
Well, that's true, and they're openly advocating for it, and they believe that within a decade, really, that we will see the first versions of Homo sapien 2.0 or 2.5 or whatever it is that they're, that they're always talking about. And when I started doing research into genetic modification 12 or 13 years ago, Dr. Monteith, I doubt that there were more than 1% of the population that had even heard the term human-animal chimera or transgenics or biotechnology or synthetic biology, let alone some of the things that transhumanists are talking about today. But you just look at what has happened in just the last 10 years. I mean, we've derived stem cells by inserting human genomes into rabbit eggs. We've created mice that have human prostate glands. We've made sheep that have half human livers. In fact, this last year, Britain's Academy of Medical Sciences reported that scientists were creating thousands of examples of transgenic animals. I printed that record when it was first published because it was astonishing to me that they would admit this. Thousands, thousands of transgenic variations of animals carrying human DNA. And according to that report, and I'm going to quote this, the introduction of human gene sequences into animal cells in vitro is a technique now practiced in virtually every biomedical research institution around the world, end quote. So even if that statement is exaggerated, it tells you that we are talking about a widespread form of science. And it's what the Watchers did once before. Now, in another article, maybe, I don't know, three, 4 months ago, I can't quite remember, but an article, it was the Washington Post article, it was an article called Making Manimals, and I printed that article as well, and they made the statement that to make humanized animals really creepy, they said.
Hold that thought, we'll be back in just a moment here with Tom Horn. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and talking about some of the amazing things that are going on now as they are beginning to create crossbreeds between animals and humans, and animals with a partly a human liver, certainly with a human prostate. But pick this story up there, Tom.
Well, and I was just talking about the Washington Post article called Making Manimals, in which they were saying that to make humanized animals really creepy, all you would have to do is start to increase the ratio of human to animal DNA. And they said that you would do this by transplanting human cells that spread throughout the body. You'd do it early in embryonic development so that the human cells, you know, could shape the creature, the animal, the human, whatever, its architecture, its genetic architecture, not just blend in, but actually alter its characteristics. and then you would grow these embryos to maturity, and then after that you'd start messing with the brain. So what's amazing, Stan, is that you have the government, DARPA, now the president, licensing the creation, funding of human-animal stem cell sciences. That all of this is already happening in laboratories around the world, including here in the United States.
Well, I know that they're trying to create a super soldier, a soldier who can fight for days without sleep, you know, and would do just exactly as they're told. And the idea that our own military is actively trying to create this, whatever it is, a type of superhuman being, super soldier, they call him, who, of course, would be obedient and who would fight and fight to the death, but would not certainly be limited by the limitations of a normal human being. Go right ahead. They're actually working on this. Anybody can go up on the internet and just use a watch, pardon me, a word to check, or Google it in the term super soldier. You'll find that this is not theoretical. It's actually underway today.
No, that's exactly right. And what were the Nephilim if they weren't super soldiers? This is what the Watchers created. These were super soldiers, giant, powerful, terrifying. No wonder, you know, Israel trembled when the challenger that David went out against, Goliath. These were super soldiers. Of course, God blessed, David, and he took a stone and put it in his sling, and he was able to slay this giant Goliath. But if it's not for God, if it's not for supernatural intervention, man won't be able to stand against these creations. Just wait until the military unveils these super secret extended war fighters that you're talking about in the futures. I mean, these things are like something out of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, where the wizard Saruman is fashioning his monstrous Uruk-hai to wage this relentless, remorseless war for dominion. And people can do just what you said. Go to Google, they can type all this in, and they'll find that DARPA has for more than a decade been shoveling billions of U.S. tax dollars into research laboratories, universities across the United States, into this wide-ranging effort to spawn super soldiers, which involve literally injecting young men and women with hormonal and neurological and genetic concoctions, also implanting them with microchips and electrodes in their bodies to control their internal organs and brain functions, applying them with drugs that deaden some of their normal human tendencies, like the reluctance to kill their fellow human beings. But some of this research involves actually altering the genetic code of soldiers. And I've been able in the past to go literally to the government's own websites and verify this information, where they're talking about literally modifying bits of DNA to fashion a new type of human specimen, one that would function literally like a machine so that it can kill tirelessly for days on end. These mutations are going to revolutionize battle. And that's what DARPA wants. They actually wrote with that in mind in these articles that I printed some time ago. Now, Dr. Monti, think about, there's another thing here I probably shouldn't get off track, but think about the XPRIZE that's to be awarded by the XPRIZE Foundation. And this new XPRIZE, one of the things that interested me here about the new XPRIZE, it's called the Archon XPRIZE in Genomics, and it is a joint effort of the XPRIZE Foundation, the J. Craig Venter Science Foundation, as I'm sure you're very fully aware. It's a $10 million prize donated by Stuart Bluson, and it's to be awarded to the very first team that can build a device and use it to sequence 100 human genomes within 10 days or less. That's the Archon XPRIZE. But the first thing that jumped off the pages at me to me at, concerning this is why this XPRIZE is being called the Archon XPRIZE. You know, the Archons are, in the Bible, these are powerful demons against which we're involved in spiritual warfare. And according to the Bible, in fact, something like 30 different places in the Bible, the Greek New Testament refers to this invisible domain, this government that's located in the space between heaven and earth, the cosmos. And in Ephesians 6:12, it refers to that. This sphere is commanded, according to Ephesians, by these archons, the chief demons who dominate the cosmocrators, the rulers of darkness that work in and through human political counterparts, the occult hierarchy that you've so eloquently written about, who in turn command these lesser influences until literally every level of earthly government can be touched by this power. But I wondered, you know, with this Archon XPRIZE in genomics, why would they have used such a term? I mean, I get it. I get that Archon can sometimes have a non-spiritual meaning, but I had a gut feeling that because we're talking here about high-speed sequencing of the DNA of multiple persons, that we were talking about something else, maybe something spiritual. Anyway, I didn't mean to get off track about that. I didn't know if you'd even heard about that. But
no, I really hadn't. That's fascinating, and perhaps we could talk about it some other time and in more detail, but go right ahead.
Well, let me get back on track then. You know, the transhumanist movement, their goal is to use science, technology, to be able to alter the human species. Actually, they see technology as the next step in human evolution, something that will facilitate radically advancing our evolution from where we are now into something that is, in the midterm, transhuman, part human, part something else, and ultimately posthuman, something that is so radically different than what human beings are today as to not really even be compared any longer. And given those goals and what we're doing in terms of science today, note this implication in Genesis again, Genesis 6:2, where it talks about these B'nai Elohim, that they saw the daughters of men that they were fit extensions, something through which they could extend themselves into another reality. And this is what I think is happening in transhumanism. Fit extensions can be understood to be, well, a pathway, a navigational pathway. And the question is, if, as transhumanists like Professor Bostrom, who we're talking about, I think, in this hour or the hour before, if, as they want to do, by corrupting the species barrier, if watchers had mingled human and animal DNA and combined the hereditary traits of these different species into a new being, a Nephilim, this being suddenly possessed the combined intelligence, the instincts, the seeing and hearing and smelling and reacting to the environment of all these different life forms, thereby allowing it to become not just transhuman, posthuman, something beyond what we are today. And it opened these other modalities we were talking about earlier in this show. Well, here's what today molecular biologists tell us. They classify the functions of genes, what we are, within our native species. What they don't know, and I've talked to molecular biologists who have told me this, what they don't know in many cases, maybe most cases, maybe even all cases, is how a gene's coding might react from one species to another. In other words, and this goes into genetic modification of plants, humans, any kind of living organisms, there could be unpredictable realities, changes, that occur as a result of altering living species in a way that neither creation nor evolution allowed for. And that is, of course, why I talk about in my book, The Ahriman Gate, the novel that you have that's available that people listening to the show, if they want to purchase it, can. That's the reason why I chose to talk about transgenics, because transgenics is not just a science of altering a genetic structure by adding the DNA of another species, but in some cases, it might also alter the nature of that species. In other words, it doesn't just change the way it looks, it changes entirely what it is and how it thinks and how it reacts. There was a very important article that was published not long ago in the Washington Post called Chimeras, A Step Closer to Reality, and most of the article could just be, you know, rejected, it doesn't even matter. But there was a little portion of this article that was really important. And in that portion of the article, they were talking about this series of dramatic experiments that had been done by a scientist called Evan Balaban at McGill University in Montreal. And Balaban had taken small sections of brain from developing quails, and he had transplanted them into the developing brains of chickens. Now, the resulting chickens from that experiment exhibited vocal trills and head bobs that were unique to quails. Now, why this is important is because it proved that the transplanted parts of the brain from quail to chicken contained the neural circuitry for quail calls. And it offered proof that complex behaviors could be transferred across species. Now, there was a book I read not long ago called Screening DNA by Stephen Nottingham. And he wrote how that there is hidden away in our brains a permanent record of all that we are, our past, our experiences, our emotions, everything we've ever perceived are locked away in who we are. And he talked about how these could be potentially recalled. Dr. Monteith, you know how that in extraordinary cases of what's called involuntary memory, you're driving along, all of a sudden you smell something, you taste something, and it brings back memories, right? From your past. All of a sudden you do something. Some people may call this deja vu or whatever, but it brings back these extraordinary memories from your past. Now, how can that be? Things that you forgot about, you may not have thought about it for 15 years, all of a sudden something triggers that response and it comes back. Well, scientists have for the longest time argued that this kind of deep, long-term memory is stored through the creation of nerve cell connections. The problem with this is that the rapid turnover of molecules in the nervous system seems to say that memory can't be stored in that way. So now, all of a sudden, we have a group of other scientists, and they're arguing, and now this is going to make sense to you why I'm talking about all this, they're arguing that long-term memory needs a more stable blueprint than nerve endings, and they're arguing that DNA could actually supply this long-term storage of who we are in every place we've ever been. In other words, permanent memories might be being stored as altered genes, which would operate in a similar way to how the immune system remembers previous infections. Stan, if that theory of DNA is correct, then genetic engineering might inadvertently transplant memories. Not even just memories, but entire concepts of who and what we are. Now, imagine what that might mean to a human animal in the future. We could literally have, excuse me, nightmarish realities, memories, even personality characteristics being transferred from an animal to a human. And I think that when it comes to transhumanism, we're talking about something that is inevitable. The adding of DNA from an animal to a human could literally transfer characteristics, how that animal thought, what it wanted, its bloodlust or animal blood or human blood, its instincts, could literally be transferred into these new human 2.0s that transhumanists are so hopped up to, to create. We're literally talking about the creation of werewolves, of lycanthropes, humans with a bloodlust for human blood.
Sort of a natural Frankenstein, right? You know, the ideas are just so foreign. How could anything like this ever happen? But the technology is there, and there's a desire to do it. That there are people without a moral foundation who are quite willing to experiment on human life. That's the frightening thing.
Well, it's very frightening. I mean, you know, think about what animals can do, and the fact that we have professors at our leading universities advocating for the merging of humans and animals, a science that hasn't existed on Earth since the time of the Watchers.
Well, you know, between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. And I think that God is going to intervene, and perhaps that intervention is not too far away. Well, Tom, we've got...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
There are people who are out there, of course, who intend to kill off most of the world's population. There are people who are destroying the very substance of food through genetic engineering. We actually have a four-tape set on genetic engineered food, and that's not the exact title, but you can call and ask for the four-tape set on genetic engineered food, and it's a frightening, frightening story. You really would want to get our talk on population control. And, of course, we have a talk, another talk called None Dare Call It Genocide, and the one on planned population reduction, the talk we gave for the Prophecy Club. I think that's probably the best one. I wish we had a syllabus that goes with that to document all the things, but I can tell you we have all the material. There's no question that the material we have in that talk is 100% correct. There really are people who have a different worldview. We have a four-tape set on why do we still have cancer, another one on genocide, another four-tapes on Laetrile and the wonderful results that came from that, but of course we can't have that here in America. If you want to know what it's really all about, we have a wonderful four-tape set called The New Order of the Barbarians. We'll hear Dr. Dennegan, who is a pediatrician practicing in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who talks about a talk he heard about given by Dr. Day back in 1969. Dr. Richard Day was the head of medical research for the Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day, talking to a group of doctors, just thought they were going to come for a regular standard lecture. Dr. Day told them exactly what the future held, how there were too many people in the world, how they were going to have to kill off large numbers of people, and how they were going to get abortion legalized and euthanasia legalized, how there were already treatments for cancer, but they were going to be actively suppressed, how they were going to create new diseases to kill millions of people, and a decade later, why we started seeing the first cases of AIDS. Just a little over a decade later. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, there is an agenda out there. We actually carry something called National Security Study Memorandum 200. All you have to remember is NSSM or Henry Kissinger's publication on population control. It was a secret government document, eventually it was declassified, where they talk about the major thrust of American foreign policy would be population control. And actually, we know, we've talked to the doctors from both Kenya and Philippines, where they actually gave women a tetanus vaccine. Only it wasn't a free tetanus vaccine. It was really basically a vaccine to prevent pregnancy. It contained a chorionotropin so it would sensitize the women so they could never have children. Who would be horrible enough to do that? Why, the same people would be giving vaccines to children in third world countries throughout the world with a full dose of mercury in them. We've taken the mercury out of most of the childhood vaccines here in the United States. But don't you worry, we're leaving them in for those little black children so that they can never reproduce, and so it will have a profound impact on their minds. And there's now an epidemic of autism among the black children in Africa. Now, if you'd like to get more information on that, a wonderful DVD by Dr. David Ayoub entitled Mercury Autism and the Global Population Control Agenda. Mercury Autism and the Global Population Control Agenda. All of these are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. That New Order of the Barbarians is so important. One of the most important tape sets we have, and there's a transcript of that, my talk on planned population reduction, None Dare Call It Genocide, and well, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Go to our website at radioliberty.com and look at the Georgia Guidestones, the occult monument in Elberton, Georgia, which nobody, of course, will tell you about, But there is a plan, of course, to kill off most of the world's population. Please pray for revival.